Gaudeamus Omnes, the traditional Gregorian chant set to music composed by the Italian Salvatore Sacco in the early 1600s. And I suppose that's the traditional way, words matter when you discuss Latin, that we think about Latin. I wonder if you knew, thinking of a very modern interpretation, that Angelina Jolie has an inscription in Latin tattooed on her stomach, or that Latin was still the official language of Hungary, believe it or not, until the middle of the 19th century. So while we might think of Latin as a dead language, its influence is very much with us. Some groups of traditionally minded Catholics still celebrate the Latin Mass, and of course the classics, including the works of Plato and Ovid, continued to be studied with enthusiasm. Very different, I'd suggest to you, to other supposedly dead languages, like, say, Sumerian or Babylonian. So can we really call it a dead language? Some say they are extinct, those languages. This is a dead language. And if we can, then what might be the future of English, given that there are some startling parallels, my next guest will suggest, between Latin in antiquity and English today? To tell us the story of Latin and what it represents in terms of our education and general grasp of culture, why it matters, in other words, I'm delighted to welcome Jürgen Leonhardt to the program. He's Professor of Classical Philology at the University of Tübingen in Germany, and he's the author of Latin, Story of a World Language. Professor Leonhardt, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Yeah, welcome.
It's very nice to have you join us. Just for a bit of background, when did Latin originate? I've never really known.
We don't know when Latin originated, but we know for Latin from over more than 2,500 years, and it started as a regional dialect of Rome, city of Rome. We may say it was the language of the aborigines of Rome.
I see. And it was lucky enough, was it, in a sense, to accompany the arrival of the most powerful empire we've ever known, or did it facilitate that?
Latin was spread with the empire of the Romans. Of course, Roman soldiers talked Latin. Of course, the Mediterranean region was bound together by Latin. But there are many other languages. Greek remained the main language of culture and philosophy during the Roman Empire. Egyptian and Hebrew and other languages continued to be in use. There was no language imperialism as in other modern empires.
So who spoke Latin then?
Oh, that's a difficult question. Of course, the inhabitants of Rome, the city of Rome, spoke Latin. But even in the other parts of Italy, the people spoke other languages, and only within some hundred years they overtook the Latin language. And in other parts, in the Greek east of the empire, Latin never became the normal language.
So when did it stop really being spoken as a vernacular language?
That's difficult to say. I think as a vernacular language, it stopped maybe in the 1st century BC and the 2nd century BC. That means not after the Romans, but in the midst of the Roman Empire, Latin changed. It became I call it a fixed language. That is a language which didn't develop further. Yeah, of course, every time new words, new phrases and so came up, but some parts of the syntax, some parts of the structure of the language didn't change anymore. And this point was very, very early. After the Romans, but early.
Which makes what I'm about to say even more extraordinary then, because you nominate, I think, 1800, the year 1800, as a time when Latin largely ceased to be a language in active use. That's a long time after the first century. But what is so interests you is how Latin continued to hold pride of place in the European tradition of education. So why is this so? Why is a language that became fixed around about the first century. How did it come to wield such power to this day?
I think in antiquity, that's quite normal. You can't, without modern media, without television, phone, and so on, you can't have a language of a very great region without some fixation. Imagine Rome has been the vernacular language of the city of Rome. But how should people in Egypt, in Germany, in the northern part of Italy, how should they learn Latin? They had no native speakers from Rome. They had only grammar books, they had literature as models for the language and so. And so most world languages of antiquity are fixed languages without a real vernacular population.
Yes, in fact you say when languages become fixed, that is they cease to evolve, they threaten then to become dead languages. And yet some languages are very dead, as you say, like Sumerian or Babylonian or ancient Egyptian. Yeah. Latin's different, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Are they extinct languages? Is that the difference?
Yeah. At some time, Sumerian or Babylonian was a fixed language as Latin. Now, afterwards, the language ceased to be in any use. And so it has been forgotten and it reinvented in the 19th century. Latin used to be continued use until the modern times. So there's no break in the tradition. That's the one difference. But I think there's a real difference. Latin has been used at every time also in oral communication.
Yes, well, that's what you say, that in a way, it rather like English is today, it was a globally accessible language that was required for communications, not merely for educational purposes.
Yes.
But it seems to me, in your book, you really wrestle with whether we are at a bit of an inflection point, that actually Latin might be on the cusp, like a lot of our canon, of being seen as irrelevant? Am I right?
Yes, I think we are at a turning point in our generation. Until 10 years, 20 years ago, there was a strong classic tradition, not only in classics, but also in music and so on. And now this tradition, I think, stop. But I don't think that now all classical traditions, music, arts, and so on, classical languages are at the very end. I don't think that. But we have to find our new ways to deal with these traditions. And that's our modern task.
Yes. Well, Google Translate now offers to translate into and from Latin. Now, is that significant? Can you see any of the modern technology tools that might, in fact, reinvigorate Latin?
Indeed. Google has chosen Latin as one of the languages with translation algorithms.
I see.
That's the only classical, the only fixed or dead language Google has chosen. There are no translations in Greek or Sanskrit or so. Of course, I think we should make Latin living language in our times, but not to re-Latinize the world. That's not the point. I think the Latin era is over. Yeah, now English is a modern global language, and it's of no use to think that Latin could have its part in this empire of English. But I think we have to speak Latin. I think we have to make Latin a living language, because it is not possible to deal with any language without to try to use use it. And that's, I think that has been a great mistake of the classical tradition in my youth and so, to learn Latin only as a grammar, as a literature language, only to translate it. You must have some experience in speaking it or writing it, and that gives a better understanding of the tradition.
Finally, Professor Leonhardt, what would be lost if Latin scholarship disappeared?
I think the main point is we would have no access to our own tradition. Latin is not only the language of the Romans. We have some texts of the Roman antiquity, not so much, some thousand pages. More than 99% of all Latin texts in our world are modern texts, are medieval texts, are texts of early modern times. And there are most important texts written in Latin, of which there's no translation in any modern language. So we would lose a large part of our own cultural memory if nobody would able to read Latin.
Well, Professor Leonhardt, obviously very interested in Latin and in its legacy. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you very much to you.
And that's Jürgen Leonhardt, the author of Latin, Story of a World Language. It's recently published in a new English translation by Kenneth Cronenberg by Harvard University Press. And I did get an email arrive when I spoke about this yesterday to James Carlton on Radio National Breakfast. And Krishna Sen, who's the head of the Faculty of Arts in the University of Western Australia, my alma mater, sent me an email saying, just in case I didn't know, that UWA now has well over 200 students starting Latin every year, and it has grown about fivefold in the last 5 years. So that just is a little bit of an Australian aspect to the complexities around Latin. And we'd love to hear from you about whether you're a recent Latin scholar. Just don't write to me in Latin. I said, I won't really be very good in replying.